Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. And when the yogi engages himself with sincere endeavor in making further progress, being washed of all contaminations, then ultimately achieving perfection after many, many births of practice, he attains the supreme goal. Okay, everyone can repeat. And when the yogi engages himself with sincere endeavor in making further progress,
being washed of all contaminations,
then ultimately achieving perfection after many, many births of practice, he attains the supreme goal. Purport. A person born in a particularly righteous, aristocratic or sacred family becomes conscious of his favorable condition for executing yoga practice. With determination, therefore, he begins his unfinished task. And thus he completely cleanses himself of all material contaminations. When he is finally free from all contaminations, he attains the supreme perfection, Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the perfect stage of being freed of all contaminations. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 7:28. Yesham chantagatam papam jananam punya karmanam te dvandav moha nirmukta bhajante mam dridavrataha. After many, many births of executing pious activities, when one is completely freed from all contaminations and from all illusory dualities, one becomes engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord.
Thank you. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Milidam Yena Tasme Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupadam Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutapadakamalam Sri Gurum Vaishnavanamuscha Sri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Tam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sarvadutam Parijana Saitam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakanamuscha Pancha Kalpatrivyascha Kripa Sindhu Devacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we almost at the end of this wonderful chapter on understanding the different yoga processes that it's brought us to, and now culminating, as Prabhupada is saying in the purport, Krishna consciousness being the topmost of all this yoga practice. But it's been very interesting, hasn't it? You know, we just got like 2 verses I think left to finish the chapter. And the theme is similar in this last part till we end, where Arjuna is inquiring, what happens to this unsuccessful yogi? What happens if somebody is actually unsuccessful? So we were learning from text number 41 that there are two parts that are there. The one that is temporary and the one that's a permanent part. The one that's successful and one is failed. Where the yogi has traversed the path and he hasn't become successful. And then the other one where one has continued the path and he has become successful. So at this junction in the Gita here, we concerned about this part of the unsuccessful person. What happens actually? Because we are also practicing a form of yoga, bhakti yoga, right? So we may end up in a similar situation, if not already. And what will happen, you know, what actually happens to us in that state where we are unsuccessful? You know, it's quite a long stride to reach for prema. And we know we struggle on the levels of anatta nivritti. We come from Shraddha and we come up the ladder. And then when we come to anatta nivritti, then it starts to get a little difficult there. We do the bhajana kriya, we do the sadhana. But when we get to this anatta nivritti, then it really starts happening. Then we really start working on ourselves and we realize, hey, it's not as easy as I thought, you know. It's going to take a lot more. So we may actually be in a similar situation also, where we may not be able to complete it all at once. But Hare Krishna, welcome. So we may not; it may not be so easy to complete it all at once. But nevertheless, there's hope. That's always there. Prabhupada always gives us hope. In the most hopeless situation, there's always some hope. Especially we are confident of the mercy of the acharyas of Krishna. And today's verse is one such verse. That the yogi who is sincere, there's like three main points in the translation. One who is sincere, the yogi who is sincere, and if he becomes clear of his sinful reactions, when that happens, and after many, many births, he comes to the process of Krishna consciousness. So we're going to explore these three a little bit in different ways. One of the difficulties is the fear aspect. We become fearful that what happens if I can't make it? And usually in the, for one, we are practicing, like I said, bhakti yoga, but this yogi that we're reading about and studying about, he's not actually come to the stage yet. He's coming to it slowly, but he's not practicing bhakti yoga as yet. So we have the upper hand in it. But still we can learn the lesson. So that fearfulness comes. That's why a yogi takes so much of time to prepare himself mentally, physically. We've been learning so much about the Ashtanga Yoga process, right? Niyam, the eightfold processes. We went over hundreds of times with different classes. So it's so much of preparation. I always thought, I'm sure this point must have struck you, why does a yogi have to live so long? Why does a man have to live 300 years, 400 years? Why does he have to stay so long? If he's practicing and he's so determined, he's completely detached from this world, why does he have to live 300 years? Is it so enjoyable living the way he is? And if he's tasting the higher bliss, then give up the body. But the secret is he's preparing himself, because if something happens where his mind is not balanced, or something that he's not, like Prabhupada uses the word in the purport, contamination. If there's some contamination there, he is not going to achieve the goal. So it is not so easy. Therefore he's making 100%. We know, we see different examples in the 9th chapter of the first canto, Bhishma Dev's teachings. And when he was leaving, okay, he's a devotee of Krishna, but he's acting, he's carrying on the part of somebody who was waiting for the right time, if you remember. He was waiting for the timing. He was already riddled with arrows. All the blood had seeped out of his body, but still he was functional. But he was waiting for the right time. Whereas somebody like Katvanga Maharaj, just when he heard, it's going to happen now, you have one moment, okay, Krishna. So this is the difference of the devotee and the yogi. The devotee is always preparing. This is his whole life. And he's ready at any moment. But a yogi, although he's living 300 years, what is the value of 300 years if you're still not ready? In such a short moment, life can end at any time. So this is the difference with the devotee and with the yogi. It's not an easy path, but for one who is sincere, Prabhupada is saying in the translation, the sincere yogi, he attains it. Now what is the other fear? Yeah.
But Krishna addresses very strongly to become a yogi only instead of a devotee.
Yes.
In all that, 50 chapter.
Okay, keep your question. We will address it at the end of the class. Okay. keep it. It's a good question you're asking. It's going to come up in the class also. Good point. All right, Prabhu. So, where was I? Yeah. So that fearfulness, because in the material world, we're prone to forgetfulness. Now, somebody may be a great professor. He may have learned so much, have gathered so much of knowledge. But when he dies and takes another body, he has to again learn the ABC. He has to again learn 1, 2, 3. He doesn't come back. The knowledge is not there. He has to refresh it and learn it again. But for a devotee, the assurance is there that whatever bhakti you've performed, it will be there as your credit. And wherever you continue in the next life, then from there onwards you will start. We see in our society also that there are many personalities. It doesn't. You can see that they are coming from higher realms. You know, they are not just evolving out of the human species. They actually, because part of the, if you remember in that text 41, when it was saying that those who don't perfect, what happens to them? They go to the heavenly planets. So the higher ones, Svarga Loka. And after that, then they get a chance to come back. And Prabhupada has said that the second, the third and fourth generation of ISKCON, great personalities will take birth to carry on the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. So who are these personalities? Some of them will be really great pure devotees. But many of them will be this unsuccessful yogis who have come from the higher planets. And Prabhupada is even saying they'll queue up to take birth within ISKCON, because this is the Yuga Dharma. Who else is propagating the Yuga Dharma so strongly except the Hare Krishna movement? So they'll queue up because they want to be part of the crucial yoga process of the age. The yogic principles that will come very easily to a person like this. So naturally from a young age you'll see they'll have proclivity towards hearing about yoga, towards practicing yoga. They'll be able to sit very comfortably. You know, they'll be a very sattvic people. They'll be very calm, tatiksika karunika suriti sarva dehanam ajatu shatruha shanta sadvir bhushana sadhu bhushana. Qualities of the sadhu, they'll have some qualities like this. We'll see different things. We know in our society there are devotees who born somewhere. I have a friend born in Bosnia who can do just amazing yoga asanas, completely amazing yoga asanas, you know. So how did he get this? How did he get this ability to do this? So it's coming from the past life like that. So this fearful aspect. Now a devotee doesn't fear because naturally if we start from Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anatta Nivritti, usually we stagger around that path. But if we traverse that path and come to the higher level, Ruchi, Nista, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhav, Prem, then wherever we stop from there we can start off in the next life. And we see there are many examples of devotees who are really practicing wonderful, sincere Krishna consciousness, sincere yogis. They're practicing with their full heart, and we get great inspiration from devotees like this to practice our own, so we get uplifted also. So the sincere yogi who practiced through this. One point that I had here, I just want to check this quickly. So the Vedas itself, in the Vedas, there's two sort of parts that are there. There's the esoteric part and there's the exoteric part. What these big words mean, there's the internal aspect and then there's the ritual. And if we get caught up in the ritual without developing much of the esoteric part, the internal part, then it becomes what happens, we become contaminated. We become diverted. We're practicing yoga, we're practicing bhakti yoga, but if we focus too much on the ritual, then we lose the track or the essence of it. Like today is what? Today is Ekadasi. What Ekadasi is it? Parama Ekadasi. It's one of the two Ekadasis that come every 3 years. Padmani Ekadasi and Parama Ekadasi. Padmani was earlier on, and this is in the Krishna Paksha, the dark moon. Then you get the Parama Ekadasi, and it only comes in the Purushottam Mass. So one devotee came to me yesterday and said, Prabhu, what should we do? You know, it's the last 5 days of Purushottam Yoga, Purushottam Mass, and I've read this whole thing. There's a whole printout that came out yesterday. So I think some devotees must have read it. Very interesting. But the goal of that was saying that you'll be alleviated in essence if you follow the Ekadasi from poverty, and you'll get wealth. Now, a devotee doesn't need these things. A devotee is not interested in money and food. Naturally, it depends on Krishna. So what's the esoteric part? That's the ritual. If you do the whole thing, your whole life, you'll never run short of food. This is needed. It's part of it, but it's not the essence of it. For a devotee, he wants how can I deepen my bhakti towards it? So in essence, I told him, well, if you read through it, I also read it, and it was saying, do what you feel comfortable doing and focus on the devotional aspect. That's the part we want to. Then we won't get sidetracked like what's happening here in today's verse. We're cultivating the devotional aspect, understanding that these are there. The external parts are also there. So this was something that was relevant that came out. And when I was reading through, preparing for the class today, yeah, that can happen, you know. Because we always feel, what can happen if I get sidetracked? You know, I don't want to lose. I've come so far in trying to cultivate bhakti for Krishna. I may not have succeeded very much, but I'm trying to develop sincerely, you know. I'm not trying to cheat myself. I'm not trying to cheat others. I'm not trying to cheat Krishna. So some sincerity is there. How far is that going to get me? Krishna will protect that of mine. So, yeah, that was the one point there. Something very interesting I read recently. It said in life, don't just go through life, grow through life. G-R-O-W. Don't just G-O through life, but grow through life. And that is a learning experience. It's not always easy, because we don't want to change much. It's not easy to change, right? You know how difficult it is when you want to adapt some new aspect to your Krishna consciousness. It's always difficult. So growing, life is a growing lesson. It's a lesson to learn. We don't just go through it. Grow through it. Learn something from it. Catch something from it and go through it. Now, in the purport, Prabhupada is saying the second point. 728, he's quoting this verse, 728. Yesam gatam, yetam, yesam, yesam tvanta gatam papam, jananam punya karmanam, te dvanta mohini mukta, bhajate mam ditavata. Krishna is saying that one who is yesam gatam, yesam tvanta gatam papam, at the end, through his life, it is cleared out all the sinful reactions. Janana punya karmana, and this kind of person, janana punya karmana, by cultivating pious activities after that, what happens to him? Te dvandva moha nimukta. He's dvandva, no more duality. He's not seeing that this, he's not deluded anymore. That, oh, maybe this is important, like what this devotee asked me yesterday. Maybe this is important, that's important, what should I do? No, he's clear, no more duality. Te dvandva moha is not illusioned. Te dvandva moha, the last, the bhajate mam dhritavata, with determination. He's executing devotional service with determination, strongly focused. Then he executes Krishna consciousness very fixed, very strongly. So, one may ask, okay, fine, one may be executing devotional service, but where does the memory of this come from? How does he get helped along? And a very interesting point comes out, that Krishna is always there to help. And how does he help? As this super soul. Ishvarava Sarva Bhutani Riddhi Arjuna Tishtati. He's situated in the heart of everyone. And from that, he's inspiring to get to do like this. Like when you get up in the morning. You ever had this experience? When you get up in the morning and you find like, where am I? Everything is like, I can't figure out where I am. Everything is like a little, and then it takes a few seconds and then, oh yeah, I'm in Vrindavan. Oh yeah, it's 4 o'clock. I'm late for Mangala Aarti or something like that. So where does that memory come from? It's coming from the super soul. That inspiration that is coming from the super soul. So at a young age, one gets this inspiration, like this yogic principles to follow, to live a sattvic kind of lifestyle. This morning, Prabhupada made a very interesting comment in the class. This morning, Prabhupada was talking about Lord Chaitanya being the originator of the Sankirtan movement, and just 17 years old. You heard this? Prabhupada class this morning. And he was saying that this Krishna consciousness movement is started by young people. Because what age were the people at Prabhupada's time? They were only like 17, 18 years old, really, really young. So Prabhupada used that opportunity to say, well, you got some inspiration to come this far now. Now don't lose the chance. Cultivate your Krishna consciousness. There was a very interesting article I read by Satsurup Maharaj. It was when he was a brahmachari. He wrote this article on the devotee. Because he just, being a brahmachari means it's like really early days in Krishna consciousness. It was like 65 roundabout there. So the society wasn't really developed yet. They used to call Prabhupada Swamiji at that time. So I had a little recording read out of it. I'll just play it for you quickly, just to create some variety. Okay, listen carefully, huh? This is a little interesting. Okay, that was it. So, if you catch anything from that, yeah? So, Prabhupada, Satsurup Maharaj was reading out his notes in Prabhupada's class, and then he came across this interesting details that Prabhupada was saying that you must have been yogis in your past lives to have come to Krishna consciousness in this lifetime. Same point. That means fallen yogis from heavenly planets kind of thing. And there was another interesting note by Narada Muni. Prabhupada was saying that Narada Muni is saying, even if you come to Krishna conscious and if you're crazy, it's okay. So, yes, there is place for everyone, lazies and crazies. So, and then he gives details. Prabhupada is giving details about his personal life, how when he was 6 years old and he came, his father used bought Radha Krishna deities and he showed him how to offer. We saw that in Abhay Charan series, right? Prabhupada showed how to offer, how to things like that. So this is the beauty of being born in a devotee kind of family. Very wonderful, very rare situation. And then many births. The last part of the translation, Prabhupada speaking about many births. That one takes many births to get this. So it's not always an easy birth. It's not that, you know, devotees just fall off. It's a development. It's a progression. Being born at right times at the same time is quite an interesting science. Astrologically, when the charts are done, you can see that the times, what time one is born, coincides with one's nature. We read about that. We even hear about in the Krishna book. And so when Duryodhana was born, the omens that were there, the donkey was braying and the jackal was crying. So these are kind of signs that shows, you know, inauspiciousness. I don't know if you remember, 2 or 3 weeks back, Rohini Sutta Prabhu was giving the Bhagavatam class. And it was a heavy rain day. And all of a sudden, just above the temple, about 2 kilometers up, there was a huge storm cloud. I think Adidev Prabhu maybe was there. And this cloud just exploded. It just exploded over the temple. The thunder was so loud, my room was vibrating. You know, I never experienced thunder like that. And you experience it? Yeah, so Prabhupada says when there's natural calamities like this, then some evil personality, some unpious person is being born. And when a pious person is being born, then there's wonderful symptoms of... on that point, last 2 weeks back, I think I read something about the Japanese tsunami. At that time when the Japanese tsunami took place, when was it? 2 years ago? Yeah? Like 2 years ago, I think, right? The fishermen in Japan, a certain fish came up out of the sea that doesn't always come up. And according to the Japanese tradition, when this fish comes up, it's a great omen. It's called, in the Japanese language, I won't even know how to say it to you, but I'll give you the translation. The translation of the name of this fish is the messenger from the palace of the sea king. The messenger from the palace of the sea king. Who is the sea king? Varuna. So, it's a message saying that some bad omen is going to come. And 2 days after that, the Japanese tsunami occurred. So there's symptoms in nature like this also, that storm cloud also. So for a devotee also, there's great symptoms when a devotee is born. Like Prabhupada, when at his time, he was born on Janmashtami day. How more fortunate can you get than that, right? So at the same time, if one passes away in an auspicious time, so that is birth. If one passes away in an auspicious time, then he gets the proper destination. So the secret is what you're thinking of. In 8.6, Krishna says this, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajante ante kalevaram. What you're thinking of at that time of death, that you shall attain without fail, Arjuna. So it's your thought at that time. So if you're, and the next verse, he encourages Arjuna to fight. Mam anu yudhyacha. Fight for me, do it for me. 8.7. So it's the point is what your thought is at that time. If you can cultivate, you can only have the proper thought then if you're cultivating it through this lifetime. So then only it would become proper. Okay, thus far we have 10, 20, 15 minutes left. I've spoken all theory. Right? And everybody is sleeping. I'm also sleeping. So I think we'll change it a little bit and liven it up a bit and give you something really topical, practical, and you can see for yourself firsthand how a fallen yogi takes birth in a devotee family. Now, again, we must be thinking, what is this crazy devotee talking about? So, in 1973, there was a brahmachari in Edinburgh temple, in London, Edinburgh is Scotland, I think. The details I'm not sure, but in Scotland, I think. In London, whose name was Raghava Prabhu. And he just got initiated by Prabhupada. He went to Edinburgh to get initiated by Prabhupada. And Romapad Maharaj was the temple president at that time. And this devotee, his name was David. And then he got initiated as Raghava Prabhu. And unfortunately for him, the very next day after the initiation, he was going back to the temple, to his temple, and they met an accident and he passed away, and Prabhupada told Romapad Maharaj to offer some kind of like Tirubhav Thiti, glorification of Raghava Prabhu. He heard about it and he was very like solemn. And so Prabhupada told them to do this. What had actually happened, the devotee was driving the vehicle for them to come to the initiation place, that temple in Edinburgh. He slept away on the wheel. His name was Krishna Das and he slept away on the wheel and the vehicle went out of control and this devotee was thrown out of the window and he had his pelvis broken, pelvis is your hip, and he had his stomach area really badly damaged. So this is him. If you want, I'll pass it around, you'll be able to see it clearer. Yeah, you'll be able to see it. You can see him with the tilak there. This is really early days, you know, it's like, okay, 73 is not so early, but he was a brahmachari at that time. You can have a look at him, Raghava Prabhu. Okay, this is 1973. In 1975, how many years later? 2 years later, another devotee is born. And this time, he is a she. Right? It's a female devotee, a Vaishnavi. And her name, her initiated name is Ratnavali Devi Dasi. 1975, 2 years later. This is Ratnavali Devi Dasi. Okay? This is her. You can see, of course, they don't look the same, right? This is sure, right? So you can pass this around also. You can see her with tilak and everything there. So what happened? This devotee, this Mataji, this girl, she's still present in, I think she lives in London right now. So she was born in 1975, 2 years later. And she grew up in a typical Hindu family, right? And one day at high school, she got assaulted by some drug addict. And she was beaten over her head with a log repeatedly. And this guy was probably crazy and he had like nails in the log and he was just like slamming her over the head. So she had put her hand over to protect herself and she could hear like inspiration saying, you know, act as if you did. Just act as if you did. So this guy thought she was dead and he left her alone after that. She was very badly beaten up and, you know, she recovered from it. But her life wasn't the same after that. And then, one day at home, naturally, knock knock, who's there? Hare Krishna. You have some books to distribute, something. Book distributors came to visit her, to the family. And she saw the Bhagavad Gita. I don't know if it was, yeah, it's probably this version. And she saw Krishna, okay, it's typical Hindu book, nothing special. But when she turned the book over, who's at the back? Srila Prabhupada. And she saw this man, and of course this is like one of the most amazing pictures anybody would say, right? Prabhupada at the back of the Gita. It's just so, like he's looking at something there. And she felt attracted to this sadhu. She didn't know why, but she just felt attracted. And then she started to read, and she understood a bit about it, but she wanted to meet the devotee. So she went to the Edinburgh temple. And she met the devotees and went to the Sunday program and her life went on like that. Not thinking anything, just being an ordinary devotee. Right? Not thinking anything special. Right? Then one day, somebody mentioned about, one thing she was very attracted to was Harinam Kirtan. She didn't know why, street chanting. And she liked to play the African drum. It's called a djembe. The African drum is played sideways like this. Now for a Mataji, you can you can understand it's not something you would see commonly, you know, a Mataji playing a djembe drum. Even a djembe drum is from Africa, you don't see ladies playing it much, you know. So this girl liked to play the drum. You know, she's young and she's full of energy and she's enthusiastic about Kirtan. So the one day, Tribhuvanath Prabhu was in the Harinam and she bought this drum and she brought it for the Harinam and she was playing it and he noticed she plays it good. And he called her forward. Tribhuvanath Prabhu is one of the great brahmachari devotees from Prabhupada disciple. Many of you may have heard of him. He's passed away now. But he saw the talent in this girl and he called her forward and he says, come play here in the front. Now another thing that the etiquette, you know, naturally you don't want a young girl being right in front of all the brahmacharis there. It wasn't very proper. But because a senior devotee had asked him, come forward and come and, you know, glorify Lord Chaitanya. So she carried on to play, and then as the kirtan faded, she went to the back of the... Can I get some water, please, Prabhu? Sorry. As the kirtan faded, she went to the back of the kirtan party. And then Tribhuvanath Prabhu shouted at her and said, come front again, come front. And then he called her front again. She says, you know, and he said to her, you play very well, you know. So after the kirtan, somebody told her that, you know, there used to be a brahmachari used to play just like you. And his name was Raghava Prabhu. And she says, oh, that's very interesting. Nothing thinking about it, okay, coincidentally. So then she, you know, in coming to the temple regularly, she got inquisitive about this. Who is this Raghava Prabhu, you know? So she started to inquire more. And she was not initiated at that time. And then she took initiation from His Holiness Bhakti Churu Swami. And she would take a shiksha from Tamal Krishna Maharaj. So in consultation with the both of them and meeting many other devotees, she started in time to get like dreams and visions of different situations of accident and her home and things like that. Thank you so much, Prabhu. Thank you. And then it got so serious about it, then she started to inquire more about this Raghava Prabhu, and then she found out, hey, this is what happened. He met with an accident, he was a Prabhupada disciple, and he left, he liked to play the jhama, and then it just like, it's still speculation, right, at this point. So she asked to Bhakti Churu Maharaj, please, can I do a hypnosis and regression thing, where you go under hypnosis and regression and they take you to a past life. Can I do that and see whether it's really true or not? And then she went ahead with it. Now, the whole document, the whole story is 11 pages, and I don't want to just tell you all the story. So I asked Madhaji to just read out that part so it becomes relevant, and then we'll continue the story from there, okay? I'd like you to read it from...
Okay, past life regressions. November 2001. I had His Holiness Dhammakrishna Goswami as my Siksha Guru, and he was very kind and inspiring me very much, especially on Hari Nams and playing the African drum. I decided to speak to my Guru Maharaj and Dhammakrishna Goswami about my strange experiences. They both advised me to do past life regression, and I underwent two of them. Both regressions showed that I was a young brahmachari performing Harinams with Tribhuvanath Prabhu. There were some scenes with Srila Prabhupada which made me very emotional. After both regressions, on the following mornings, coincidentally, I had exactly the same recurring dreams that a man with long hair falls asleep on the steering wheel and I'm in the back of the vehicle and the vehicle crashes. Raghava, Raghava, Raghava. January 2002. I had a dream that Krishna Das Prabhu was calling out, Raghava, Raghava, Raghava. After a few weeks, I had another dream where I was trying to tell him that I was his old friend Raghava, but he could not see me. I had many nightmares of vehicle crashes that seemed to be ongoing and horrific. I also had a few dreams of Edinburgh, such as I am going up the stairs of Edinburgh Temple for Srimad Bhagavatam class. My husband and I met up with Krishna Das Prabhu to explain what was happening, and I was very nervous as I knew that no one would approach him regarding Raghava, as it was a very sensitive issue. When I sat in his car, he started driving, and the door kept opening on my side. I tried to shut the door many times, but still it kept opening on my side. Then I shouted that the door was not shut. Krishna Das Prabhu immediately stopped the car, shut the door from the outside, and said in a very confident way, don't worry, you are safe with me. It was an ironic, strange and humorous way to meet. When we arrived at his home, I mentioned my revelations, and he was very kind and open-minded. He wanted me to keep him updated as he was very curious. My husband and I visited the area where ISKCON Edinburgh Temple had been at 14 Forest Road with the help of a map. As I had ongoing problems with my stomach, I went to the nearby hospital to get a plaster around it. Returning, I noticed a park nearby. I was shocked as it was the same park in my dreams. I did not want to leave as I felt that I had been there before. I looked at it from many angles and knew that it was the same as my dream. Then I went to find the location of the old Edinburgh Temple, which to my amazement had become a pub. When I went inside, it had the same black spiral stairs and an alleyway at the entrance. I ran out as it had taken me time to digest all this. I felt like this was my home and I'd been here before. Raghava had been based in the Edinburgh Temple and he had loved chanting his japa in the same park nearby, which was named the Meadows. I was amazed to see in reality that all I had seen in my dream on October 2001, that you shall attain, April 2002. I spoke to my Guru Maharaj, updating him on my revelations. I asked him if this was a figment of my mind or a revelation from above. He replied that it was a revelation from above. This was hard to digest because even though I knew in theory that we are not the body but the soul, it still had taken me time to accept in reality. My Guru Maharaj was very supportive and caring and was helping me in dealing with this. On his visit to London, he had also spoken to Krishnadas Prabhu, who was already convinced that in my past life I was a Raghava. Krishnadas Prabhu was very relieved, although it was a lot for him to digest. Once, when my Guru Maharaj had spoken to me, he asked me jokingly, "So who was the girl that you were thinking of at the time of your death?" I was shocked, as I was embarrassed, and I replied, "I do not know, and better that I don't know." In 8.6 Bhagavad Gita as it is stated, "Whatever you think of at the time of death, that state you will attain without fail."
So, isn't it amazing, huh? So the story goes, I'll just speak a little bit, 1 minute more and then we'll end it because we're already a little late. So, oh, it's 6:30 now, okay. So, thank you. So, it goes on like this. The story was just, I couldn't put the article down, you know. It just went on and on. Now the amazing thing, this girl, the way she looks here, why this Raghava Prabhu was born as this girl? Because in the Edinburgh temple, there was an Indian girl there named Saraswati. Satyavati. Okay? And Satyavati, now she's a little older. Okay, I think she's probably still there at the present time. And when she was young, she looked exactly like Ratnavali. Exactly, the same features and everything. And Raghava Prabhu, some of the devotees knew that he somehow liked this girl. He saw this girl and okay, maybe he didn't pursue it, but he saw her and he liked her. So what do you think he was thinking of at the time of death? He was thinking of this girl and therefore he was born with her features and everything. Now the amazing thing at the end of the story is so many amazing details have come up, but I'll just tell you what happened at the end of the story. Ratnavali actually meets Satyavati. That means she meets this lady, you know. Somehow or the other they get to meet and then she says, you know, do you remember any brahmachari when you joined in your early days named Raghava? And she says, not really, but I think maybe there was. And then she says, well, this is, you know, my amazing life story and this is how it's come about. And then she says, you know, and then Satyavati tells her that you really, the way you look now, in my early days, I looked exactly like you. Exactly same features and everything. So here's a topical contemporary spiritual proof
You need any more proof than this? That Krishna consciousness, what Krishna is saying in the Gita, what Prabhupada is saying over and over. You know, like I spoke for like 40 minutes, you know, and everybody was just looking at my face theoretically, right? But when we get something like this and real tangible, this story, everybody has heard of Bhakti Chola Maharaj, everybody has heard of Edinburgh, it's this Mataji, you can go and meet her right now in London, she's still living. So she can tell you her whole life story. So it becomes real. The story, that verse that we heard about today, the yogi, it doesn't make it, there's still a chance to continue. And fortunately that this devotee had recollection so that we can get faith in Krishna's words more. And she's serving actually too. It's not an easy thing to talk about, you can imagine. But by doing this, she's giving us so much of strength, so much of Shraddha, faith, that this is not just a philosophy. It's a real science, Krishna consciousness. And if we go through it, with all our heart, we can also achieve. We will also develop, progress. And if we don't continue, okay, in the next life we'll try to go ahead. Prabhupada said that my disciples will only, in a conversation once, they were asking about Kali Yuga and Kalki avatar. So Prabhupada commented that my disciples won't be around to see Kalki avatar. They will take with two, at most three births, and then they'll go back to Godhead. This is Prabhupada's benediction for us. So we're so close. We're so close. How do we know? Once the Prabhupada has asked that, how do we know like we're really close? So Prabhupada was saying, when you're next to the fire, you can feel the heat. You'll know when you're close enough, when you know you're close enough, you'll feel the heat. And then you know, I'm almost home. I'm almost home, I'm finished with this material, all this yoga and this mysticism and all this deludedness and everything is all gone. Now I'm just back with Krishna and I can really be happy eternally. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Yes Prabhu, please tell us your question again. Go ahead.
Devotee is preparing very well, yogi is not preparing, then why Arjuna is stressed and inspiring the Arjuna to follow the yoga practices?
What yoga? Bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga is yoga. That's why I said to you in chapter 8-6, Krishna is saying, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam, what you think of at the time of death. That's the crucial point for the yogi, isn't it? And then you have the Gita there, 8-7. And then in the next verse, what is Krishna's advice then? Don't worry about, okay, it's important what you think about, but mam anusmara yuddhacha, just think of me and fight.
9-34.
No, 8-7. Fighting, yes. See, that's how a devotee attains Krishna. Krishna is saying that you will attain me without doubt. The yogi is doubtful, therefore he's preparing, living 300 years. Devotee is not bothered. Why? Krishna's words. Man, Arjuna is a kshatriya, is a soldier. He has to fight. We are not soldiers. We are practicing, our duty is preaching. We are doing brahmanical work. So, but same principle can be applied. Ma manusmara yuddhacha. Just think of me. In Arjuna's case, it was fighting. For our case, it's preaching, doing your sadhana, whatever activities you're doing. And at the end there, Krishna is saying, if you live in me, you will come to me without doubt. Nothing to doubt, no need to fear. What will happen to me? Am I going to continue? Maybe what will happen if I cannot? No need doubt. Krishna is assuring. That's his words, Krishna's words directly. Okay?
I want to put up this question.
Yes, Prabhu.
What is the age limit up to which one devotee should observe fasting? Suppose he's 80, 90, 100. Can he follow the fasting after that age? Is there any relaxation by Prabhupada?
Yes, good question. Actually, we have to do what is practical. Just like I said earlier on, the devotee asked me, what should I do? Should I keep nirjal? Should I do this? Should I, because next 5 days, should I fast next 5 days? What should I do? Do what is practical for your devotion. Do what is practical for your bhakti. For you. You know, your health and my health is different. Your mindset and my mindset is different. Maybe I need to do something rigorous and vigilant to keep my mind focused on Krishna. For you, it may not be that way. You may have a much more sattvic lifestyle. So you don't have to grab your mind and fix him into something. He is always peaceful. So you can always, it's comfortable for you to read 3-4 hours, no problem. It's comfortable to you. So age has got nothing to do with it. You know, age, whether you're 80 or 100, you do what is practical for you. But do it. The point is, always remember Krishna, never forget. If that is happening, what are we concerned about fasting? Why do we need to? Sukadeva Goswami sat 7 days and 7 nights without a drop of water, speaking Bhagavatam. That's not even, if you talk about Ekadasi, that's like nirjal for 7 days. Parikshit Maharaj sat 7 days, 7 nights hearing Bhagavatam. So that's the point. If you absorbed in that, it doesn't, it's there, it's needed. But like I said earlier on, the Vedas give the esoteric and the exoteric. The esoteric aspect, the deep aspect is, I want to develop love for Krishna. If anything can help me towards that, it's anukul. If otherwise, it's pratikul, unfavorable. That's my viewpoint. So it's not that we undermine these things and these days, but it's the spirit in which, what is the use of fasting the whole day but just thinking of food? What is the use of just waiting for 6:05 tomorrow morning when the maid gives food to us or something? What is the use if you're going to sit up the whole night and just nod off and just cross yourself? Why am I doing this? What is the use of it then? You see? So do what is practical for you. For some devotees who feel comfortable on that level, fantastic, do it. But do it, like I'm saying again and again, the mood is, I want to develop bhakti. That's what these Madhava Titi Bhakti Janani. These days are meant to develop devotion. Ekadasi and Janmashtami and all these different days, they are meant to cultivate the devotional spirit, not the external reason. As we develop more, then devotion is our goal. Nothing else is important. Yes, he's allowed us to take non-grain. He's, no, I'm saying age has got nothing to do with Ekadasi. I said that before, no? You can, Prabhupada is,
may not according to the health, you follow the fasting. There are the scripture and other things I have read.
Okay.
75 years after that, depending upon your health condition, you may follow or may not follow.
Did you get the point that I made about bhakti? Did you understand that point? Just now I spoke for the last 5 minutes about bhakti. Did you catch that point? If you caught that point, then age doesn't matter, fasting doesn't matter.
No, bhakti will always be there.
No, Prabhu, no. Prabhu, bhakti is not always there.
Follow bhakti up to the last breath of our life. Bhakti is there.
How you be sure of this?
You see, once you committed to become a devotee, we always follow bhakti, we keep in our mind till the last breath of our life.
But what is the chance if you, like what happened to this devotee, he forgot, he thought of this Mataji. What happened to this Prabhu, Raghava Prabhu? Look what happened to him. So it's not always guaranteed. It's not. Therefore we have to, why we are doing all this Gita class and sadhana and chanting and getting up 4 o'clock, all this, why are we doing all this? So that we know, fine, you'll get a chance again, but do you want to take another birth? Do you want to take, was this life so enjoyable for you, you want to take another birth? Is it easy?
We want to avoid another
birth. Yes, Prabhu. Yes. That's the point.
You should think of an extra birth.
That's the point.
I become a devotee. My aim and the goal is to go back to the Godhead only.
Yes.
Not taking care of another birth.
Correct. That's what I'm saying. That's my point. So how to do that? Bhakti mam abhijanati. Only by bhakti can you know me. So everything we're doing is for that goal. That's the point I'm making. Okay? Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Gopi Vananda.